Hello and welcome back to the Respiratory Essentials podcast. My name's Naomi, I'm a respiratory nurse specialist and healthcare professional engagement manager here at Asthma and Lung UK. This is episode 2 in our new series designed to support primary care clinicians from all professional backgrounds who look after patients living with lung conditions. Each week we're taking you through the brilliant basics, how to get it right for your patients and how you can feel more confident in understanding and applying the latest guidelines. As always, everything we discuss here is supported by resources on our Healthcare Professionals Hub, where you'll find practical guides, clinical tools, and patient information to use in your own clinical settings. In our last episode, we explored asthma assessment and diagnosis in both adults and children, and if you haven't listened to that one yet, I'd really encourage you to go back and catch up. Today, we're moving on to managing asthma, again, across both children and adults. We'll focus on how to apply the new asthma guidelines in everyday practice and the importance of personalising care for every patient. I'm delighted to be joined once again by our clinical lead, Dr. Andy Whittemore. Andy, welcome back to the podcast. It's great to have you with us again.
Thanks, Naomi.
Let's start off with what's really at the heart of the new guidelines, which is moving away from short-acting bronchodilators such as Ventolin or Salbutamol. Can you explain why this is and what's actually wrong with using SABAs to treat asthma?
Well, going back to basics, one of the key features of asthma is narrowing of the airways. And it's really important for our patients that they can open up the airways quickly and effectively to help them breathe. And in severe cases, this saves lives. SABAs for many years have been the best way of doing this. And our patients will take more or less of their medication depending on their symptoms. But what we also know is that asthma symptoms and narrowing of the airways is caused by untreated inflammation in the airways. This inflammation is variable and depends on the sort of triggers around us, allergies, pollution, things like that. So taking more SABA will make people feel better in the short term, but does nothing to treat the untreated inflammation, which causes more symptoms, and this will get worse if it's left untreated. This means that people who are using a lot of their SABA are at risk of more symptoms, worsening symptoms, asthma attacks, and even death. So when someone gets symptoms, of course we need them to open up their airways quickly and make them feel better. But we also need to treat that variable, untreated inflammation in the airways. So giving people more SABA increases that person's risk. Treating the inflammation reduces it.
So we need to be using just inhaled steroids, and we need to make sure that people aren't on SABA as a single therapy. How do the new guidelines recommend that we go about this?
The guidelines highlight the need for us to move to a combination inhaler which contains inhaled steroid plus formoterol. The steroid part dampens down the inflammation in the airways, but it's the formoterol that's the clever bit. It enables us to move away from SABAs. Formoterol is a long-acting bronchodilator. It opens up the airways and works as quickly as salbutamol. Because it's in the same inhaler as the steroid, every time the patient uses it, they get relief from their symptoms from the formoterol, and they treat the inflammation that's causing the symptoms at the same time. Also, it means that the patient is naturally varying the dose of their steroid to match the inflammation in their airways, which we know is variable. This reduces exacerbations because if you're using that inhaled steroid regularly and in response to symptoms, you're much less likely to get to the point of having an asthma attack or exacerbation. So it's much safer, it's much more natural for the patient, and another bonus, in many cases, it works out easier and cheaper for patients than having to carry two inhalers.
It sounds a very sensible approach. Now, there are two different ways of using ICS and formoterol inhalers. Can we start with talking about anti-inflammatory reliever therapy, or AIR as it's known? Can you tell me what it is and who might be suitable for this as an approach?
So AIR means that the patient just uses the ICS formoterol inhaler as needed instead of a blue reliever. It is their reliever. It's suitable for people with occasional symptoms, including those who previously might have been on SABA alone. And it's safer than SABA monotherapy because they're getting that all-important inhaled steroid to dampen down the inflammation. In reality, though, I find only a small number of patients will be appropriate for this because most people do need a regular dose of their preventer.
So AIR is good for people who only have infrequent symptoms. But what about everyone else? Can we move on to maintenance and reliever therapy, or MART as it's known? What is this and who's it useful for?
Right, so MART means that the patient uses this same steroid and formoterol inhaler every day for maintenance. This keeps them well. But they can also use that same inhaler as a reliever when they get symptoms. And it's suitable for most patients from when they get diagnosed And it's very intuitive to use because I've got that one inhaler to use to prevent their symptoms, but also to treat their symptoms as well.
And are there any patients who might not be suitable for combination inhalers?
Yes, it's not licensed for people, for children 5 years and under. And some people I find do have a bit of a sensitivity to formoterol. But for most people with asthma over the age of 12, it's the safest and most effective way to manage their asthma. And it should be a first-line treatment for them. So people whose asthma is well controlled on conventional treatment with separate preventer and reliever inhalers do not need to be switched to MART, but everyone on who's on SABA only and everyone with poorly controlled asthma on low and moderate doses of inhaled steroid should be considered for MART.
Okay. We're all used to saying that poor control means needing your reliever 3 times a week or more, or waking up at night with symptoms. Does the same apply when a patient is on MART?
Yes, exactly the same. So if somebody is using MART frequently, this tells us that something is not controlling their asthma.
Okay. So if our patient is having uncontrolled asthma symptoms, what are our next steps?
Well, the way I work through it with my patients is firstly, I assess the severity, frequency, and how long those extra symptoms have been going on for. I see whether firstly we need to treat that like a full exacerbation. Do they need oral steroids? I always check common treatable causes of poor control as well. So are they taking that preventer aspect of MART regularly? Is their inhaler technique correct? Are they doing it in the best way all the time? Have they got specific triggers that we're not addressing or comorbidities that we might not be sort of getting on top of for them? And if all of those things are being addressed, then I consider sort of increasing the dose to a moderate level of MART. And I found some people do find this a bit confusing. It's not about giving them a stronger inhaler. It's about them taking a higher dose of their maintenance. So for example, and this is just one of the examples. So somebody who's on Fostair 100 over 6, a low dose MART, would be on one puff in the morning and the evening and can use up to 6 extra puffs during the day if they need to. If they're uncontrolled, I would move them up to a moderate dose of MART on Fostair, and that would be 2 puffs in the morning and evening. And to get up to the maximum 8 a day, they're allowed 4 extra doses during the day if needed. One thing I always find useful with this is making sure I've updated their asthma action plan and written in the notes, just to make sure that the patient understands what they're doing now, but also so my colleagues do as well.
Great, that makes sense. How often can a patient on MART have some of these extra doses that you just mentioned before we think that they're uncontrolled?
The reason MART works so well is that it does dampen down the inflammation so people get less symptoms and less risk of exacerbations. So somebody on MART should only really need an extra dose occasionally. If they're needing that extra dose more than 3 times a week or on most days, or they're needing extra doses every day for a whole week, then this is a sign of uncontrolled asthma and that they do need a review. One thing just to flag though is if they're getting night symptoms at any time, this is a clear sign that their asthma is not controlled and does need urgent attention.
Okay, and if they are uncontrolled, what should our next steps be?
The NICE guidelines suggest that if somebody is still poorly controlled, obviously review their inhaler technique and their adherence, go through triggers, allergies, air pollution, and any changes in life, maybe a new house, a new job, new hobby, or other stressors. And I also check, are their symptoms actually due to asthma? Is there something else, or is it not quite fitting with the pattern of asthma that we know? We should check FeNO, or blood eosinophil levels, to see if there's any untreated inflammation in the background. And if either of these is high, the patient should be referred to specialist asthma services to optimise their treatment, to see whether there's other comorbidities, and whether the patient is suitable for specialist treatments such as biologics. If those inflammation levels are not raised, we can consider adding in montelukast or a long-acting muscarinic antagonist to help control their asthma better. One thing I do say though is if you are prescribed to adding in a LAMA as well, make sure you do it in a separate inhaler to the MART inhaler, because triple inhalers that contain steroid, LABA and LAMA are not able to be used for MART and cannot be used as reliever inhalers.
Great. Can we just talk about montelukast for a moment?
Of course. Montelukast is a medicine which blocks leukotrienes, and these are chemicals in the blood that play a key role in asthma by triggering inflammation, causing symptoms such as tightness in the airways, more mucus and swelling in the airways as well. They come from cells like mast cells, and they cause the airways to sort of tighten up and get narrow. For some people, especially children, they work really well and really quickly. One thing just to bear in mind with montelukast is that for some people, and I always warn everybody about this, is that some people might get bad dreams or affected sleep or changes in their behaviour or mood. I always tell my patients about this, especially parents of children, so they're not too alarmed by it and almost know to look out for it. But I do reassure them that if they were to stop the medication on getting any of these bad symptoms, then those symptoms will go away and they should just let us know. And I always sort of put in a yellow card for those patients as well.
Thank you. So we trial either montelukast or a LAMA as a single inhaler. And what if they're still uncontrolled after that?
Yeah, so for these trials, I give 8 to 12 weeks. And as with all medication changes, I make sure we've got some follow-up plan to see whether it's suiting them and whether it's working. But also that there's some very clear instructions to seek help and advice if things get worse. If the asthma is still not controlled, I again go through those basics. I check the adherence, I check their inhaler technique again, I look for triggers and comorbidities, and I measure inflammation with either FeNO or eosinophil count. If the inflammation levels are not raised, you've got a choice. If the LAMA or montelukast, whichever one you've given, has not made any difference, you should stop it and try the other one. If it's helped a little bit, consider adding in the other medicine and again reviewing the patient after 8 to 12 weeks. If things still aren't improving, either they've got some asthma which is really needing treatment by a specialist, or we need the specialist to try and find out what else is going on with their lungs that are causing these symptoms. So they definitely need referring.
You mentioned earlier about things like allergy, air pollution and stress. What should we be thinking about for patients who say their asthma is, for example, triggered by pollen?
Getting to the root cause of why people are getting the symptoms is important. So even if you're thinking about all the different inhalers and things, allergic triggers such as hay fever, I always make sure they've got an antihistamine in their system, even if it's just for certain months of the year and usually starting a good few weeks before the worst time of the year for them. And a regular steroid nasal spray calms down the inflammation in the nose, which then has a good knock-on effect for the chest and stops the symptoms affecting there as well. One of the first asthma talks I ever went to was explaining how the nose and the lungs are connected, and treating one quite often improves the other as well. So it's really important to identify and treat any triggers that we can. And for those we can't treat, we should give practical advice so that they can avoid that trigger if possible, or wearing a thin scarf across the face when in very cold weather, or avoiding the busiest roads and rush hour if pollution's a major trigger for you. I always have a look at the trigger pages on the Asthma and Lung website. Firstly, it gives me some ideas of things I can tell my patients, but I also share that link with the patients as well, so that they can take some ownership and help to control their own problems there. And of course, checking the inhaler technique time and time again to make sure the medicine's getting into the right place. And that is something I do on every single occasion. I see the patient or speak to the patient and then use our inhaler technique videos to make sure that they can go away and keep an eye on what's going on. So I always send them a link to the right video for them.
Thanks. So it's clear that we should be starting all newly diagnosed patients on a formoterol-containing combination inhaler and reviewing anyone still on SABA monotherapy for either AIR or MART. But what do we do about those patients who are on a separate reliever and preventer inhaler? They're well controlled and they're happy.
In those cases, if they're generally stable and well controlled, you don't have to change them. The guidelines are clear. If they're stable, don't rock the boat. But it is important to have the conversation, explain the benefits of MART, and give them the option. Many of my patients actually choose to go on to MART in that situation. They like to spend less money on inhalers. They like to carry less inhalers with them. They like to be on the newest and best treatments out there.
Thanks, Andy. Now, of course, medication is just part of the support package, isn't it? We need to help patients become confident in self-management, to recognise when they're getting worse and to know what to do. Can you talk me through how we achieve this using an asthma action plan, please?
Yeah, asthma action plans are vital. One thing I always say to my colleagues that I work with is I get to see a patient once or twice a year, usually for 10, maybe 20 minutes if I'm lucky. The rest of the time they are looking after themselves, and I can't expect them to remember everything I say. So I give them all an asthma action plan. This helps them to recognise the things that they need to do to stay well. It can help them to recognise when things are not going well and the actions they need to take, and also what to do in an emergency situation as well. It's really important to create the plan with the patient. It will sink in if they're hearing and listening to you going through it with them. And also that means it's more likely to be personalised and specific to them. I always upload it to the notes and send it to them, usually as a message as well, either on email or AccuRx, so they've got it on for themselves that they can share with family, schools and carers. But then if it's on the notes and they've got a copy as well, all the other healthcare professionals know what's going on with that patient. The patient and their families and friends all know what to do. And that's really important to make sure that actually that patient has got wraparound care. One of the best things that we've done in recent years at Asthma and Lung UK is our healthcare professional hub. And on there, you'll see all of our action plans and a guide for healthcare professionals to help you fill them out effectively with your patient.
Great. And that brings us to the end of episode 2 of the Respiratory Essentials podcast. A big thank you to Dr. Andy Whittemore for sharing your insights on managing asthma in children and adults. We've covered a lot today, from moving away from SABA monotherapy to using air and MART approaches, tailoring treatment, and making sure every patient has a clear asthma action plan. Hopefully, you're leaving this episode with some practical tips to take straight back into your own consultations. And remember, you can find all the resources we've mentioned, including treatment guidance, patient action plans, and links to training on our Healthcare Professionals Hub at Asthma and Lung UK. If you have any questions, you can call our helpline, which is staffed by respiratory specialist nurses on 0300 222 5800, or email us at info@asthmaandlung.org.uk. Thank you so much for listening.